Welcome back for another edition of the Pro Bono Happy Hour, brought to you by Pro Bono Institute. I'm David Lipscomb, Director of Strategic Communications for PBI. We're glad to be back after our little break last week for the 2016 PBI Annual Conference. We thank all of our sponsors for making the event possible, and we thank our attendees for joining us and for their contributions. Now on with our program. This go-round, we called up Joe Genero, partner at Dorsey & Whitney. Joe, who has previously served as a member of PBI's law firm Pro Bono Project Advisory Committee, spoke to us about the evolution of pro bono, the importance of pro bono partnerships, and Minnesota Nice, and what that term means in the context of pro bono in Minnesota, where he's based, and other parts of the Midwest. We hope you're comfortable wherever you may be, whether that's mid-commute, on your lunch break, or simply working at your desk, and we hope you enjoy the interview. Hi, Joe. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us on the Pro Bono Happy Hour. If we can just start with your position and just tell us a little bit about your firm's pro bono program.
Sure. Well, I'm sort of the pro bono emeritus partner here in that I was at the active pro bono partner back in the 1990s. And after about 3 or 4 years of that, I was succeeded by another pro bono partner, and there have been 3 or 4 since then. But I tend to be involved with the folks who are running our program at this time on a fairly regular basis, as well as being involved with the Pro Bono Institute by being active on its advisory committee, as well as attending the conferences and convocations that have been held over the years.
We've heard really good things about your firm creating opportunities for your transactional lawyers to get involved in pro bono. We just want to talk to you a little bit about how you go about that, how you go about getting folks involved in pro bono and getting them in positions in which they feel comfortable doing work that might be outside of their comfort zone or maybe speaks to their strengths and abilities.
Sure. Well, I think part of that came about because at the time I was asked to be pro bono partner of this firm, I was myself a transactional lawyer. I was a recovering trial lawyer. I'd done that from the first 3 or 4 years of my practice. But by the time I was asked to be pro bono partner, I was in our transactional area. So I was looking for opportunities to work on matters that were consistent with my area of expertise and not having to go back into court. And so we began at that point to reach out particularly to our nonprofit organizations in the community and see what we could do to assist them on their transactional matters. You know, when you think about it, a nonprofit organization is just like a client that for which we provide billable services, in that it has questions about its choice of organizational entity, organizational governance, employment problems, maybe real estate issues. So their problems are very consistent with what our billable clients run into, and as a result, our lawyers are able to assist them just as our transactional lawyers are able to assist those clients as readily as they are to assist our billable clients. What we began to do was to reach out to these nonprofits, and we found that in a lot of cases there were situations where they had been aware of some concerns they had, but as one put it, my hair's on fire with 10 other problems I've got today. I can't be thinking about legal problems that I can't pay to have resolved. Well, we said, hey, look, we're going to come in there and do this on a pro bono basis. So we developed sort of legal audits to identify issues they may have in, say, employee handbooks. What's their insurance coverage look like? How are they handling things in terms of bylaws and other organizational issues? And the result was that proved to be, first of all, great benefit to these organizations, and secondly, provided great opportunities for our lawyers to transactional lawyers to exercise their legal expertise in areas in which they could be comfortable. We've since then expanded to a number of things that we do, where we hold clinics here for similar to the clinic in a box program that PBI does. We do something like that here. We're able to bring in our nonprofit clients for to assist them in a collective session. We have our corporate colleagues from some of our clients who come in to assist with that as well. And so it really has been something that we've developed over the years and found that since a little over half of our lawyers are purely transactional lawyers, it provides them with great opportunities to use their expertise to assist pro bono clients.
We've heard about we've heard the term Minnesota Nice, and we hear that it very much applies to the pro bono culture. You know, nobody goes out there and without coming back to, you know, ranting and raving about pro bono, and we're certainly excited to hear that. But why is the pro bono culture so robust and healthy there?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with the long-standing tradition of pro bono service that our firms here in the Twin Cities have provided. You know, one of the Dorseys who was in the Dorsey firm back in the 1950s and 60s was doing pro bono work, a very prominent partner, but he felt it was part of his obligation to do that. That's true of other firms around town, where some of the founding members or some of the certainly the leaders in those firms were actively involved in pro bono work over the years. But I think beyond that, we have a broader corporate culture here, which requires, or not requires, but strongly encourages people to give back to the community. A number of our corporations here are part of what's called a 5% club, and that 5% club says that 5% of their net profits will be contributed to community causes, including, in some cases, to organizations that provide services to the poor, legal services to the poor. So it's part of it's been part of a longstanding culture here, but I think today it's also part of a desire on the part of the legal folks in the legal community, particularly in the who provide guidance and leadership in the pro bono area, a recognition that we can get a lot more done if we're working together to address legal issues in the community. Get together on the firms, our firm representatives get together on a regular basis to talk about problems and challenges and opportunities, and develop a sense of mission about how we get how we can address critical legal problems in the community that can be best done not by a single firm but by a group of firms who can have a greater effect by working together collaboratively.
We love hearing the word collaboration, and when it comes to pro bono, and you know, to your point, you can get a lot more done together than separately. So, for the rest of us, how do we replicate that culture? How do we build it and grow it?
Well, as I think one of the ways certainly that we have found it to be useful is if we have folks who are able to connect on a regular basis about their problems and concerns. It's a matter of getting the conversation going and then connecting on a regular basis. I think our pro bono coordinators meet at least quarterly, if not once a month. And so having that kind of connection and developing certain relationships and really importantly, trust in each other can lead to that kind of collaborative spirit. And then some successes on initiatives that we've undertaken to provide legal services on collaborative basis that just couldn't be done if we were trying to do each firm was trying to do it on its own. For example, a pro se clinic that we have over at the Hennepin County Courthouse and an initiative that we've undertaken to address representation of tenants in housing court on a comprehensive basis.
Changing gears a little bit here, and going back to what you were saying a little bit earlier about partnering with other organizations, Tell us what, you know, what the approach is to partnering. You know, you mentioned you fight like cats and dogs when it comes to the billable clients, but when it comes to helping folks with pro bono or doing pro bono work, if there is another firm or an organization that has some expertise, you want to reach out to them. Sort of, what's the general attitude, and you know, sort of, how do you approach partnering as a firm?
I assume you mean with other firms, or are you talking about with corporate legal departments?
Well, both. And if there's a distinction, you know, please feel free to elaborate on.
Well, in terms of other firms, I think it's among other things, identifying that there is a problem that really needs to be addressed. And we as an individual firm, we can't address it on our own. We need the help of other firms to deal with the problem and to share the, if you will, the burden of making whatever is out there that needs to be addressed to make it right. Two examples. We in the 1990s, colleague Bricker-Lavick and I visited Phoenix, Arizona, and we looked at a program there to provide assistance, a program in the courthouse to provide assistance to pro se litigants. And we came back here and talked to a couple of the judges and said, you know, we really need something. We should really have something like that here. And the judges said, by all means, please help us with these pro se litigants. Well, we started out providing counseling 2 days a week over at the courthouse for a couple of hours. And after about 5 or 6 years, we'd had to expand it to, I think it's now 4 days a week, and it's about 4 hours on each of those days. Well, you can't have one or two firms staffing that. You need a number of firms to cover all those slots that need to be covered. A second one is that recently we decided, I think we as a legal community looked at the housing situation here in the housing court situation in Hennepin County, which is where Minneapolis sits, and determined that there were so many the tenants going into court being unrepresented by counsel, that in many cases they had meritorious defenses to claims by landlords, or there were other problems with the housing that the landlords were providing, but they were never being addressed in court because those tenants didn't have legal assistance. And what we've tried to do is to throw a lot of lawyers at the situation in order to eventually reach a goal whereby no tenant who wants a lawyer will have to go into court without a lawyer, into housing court without a lawyer. It's not perfect. It's not there yet. But we have, again, with both other law firms as well as corporate legal departments, developed a staffing model for housing court, and we are getting advice to a significant number of the tenants who are going in. As I said, I don't think we're fully there yet. We've been running this for about a year and a half, but I think over time we are going to get to a point where we'll achieve that goal. But again, we couldn't have done it by just one law firm taking that on. It needed collaboration within the community to make it happen.
You know, we were discussing a little bit earlier about how you've been a member of PBI's Law Firm Pro Bono Project Advisory Committee. So you've been in a unique situation to, you know, see how pro bono has evolved. And also, as you mentioned, the firm was a charter signatory to the challenge. Just want to get some ideas or pick your brain a little bit about how you have seen pro bono evolve in that time.
Well, it goes back, for me now, it goes all the way back to 95 when we first signed up for the program. I think at that time, looking just at our firm, we probably were doing 1.5%, maybe 2% of our billable hours were dedicated to pro bono work. And with at the time, the challenge allowed the firms a year or two to get up to speed. And we did that, but we realized at that point, gee, this isn't just going to happen by itself. It needs concerted, coordinated effort to make it happen. So we began by designating people for a quarter time or half time to assist in directing the program and provided staff support as well. Again, initially probably half time staff support to make the program work. And now we've developed into a much more extensive program here and have a significant number of people involved in making the effort work. I think one of the things that, again, staying within the firm for just a minute, that has happened over the years is how strong the buy-in has been from our firm leadership. And I'm not saying that there wasn't buy-in before, but the strength of that leadership and the desire for us, not from top management, not even from those of us in the hustings who have been trying to make pro bono work well at the firms, but our management has said, why can't we move up to something more like a 5% goal? And how would we be able to do that? What kind of resources do you need to make that happen? That, I think, is a very significant change where I think the culture of pro bono has affected the way management sees the role that the law firm can play in the community. We have a lot of community involvement in our firm. We do reading in certain elementary schools in the inner city. We pack snacks for kids at shelters. We do all those kinds of things, too, that allow our staff to be engaged. But lawyers have special experiences, special expertise, and indeed an exclusive franchise to be going into court on behalf of clients that requires us to really do pro bono work. And as I said, our management has seen that role in the community can be uniquely served by lawyers doing pro bono work. And it's become, I think, an even larger part of the firm ethos that we have here. But I think beyond that, beyond us, the tremendous amount of growth that's occurred through the involvement of law firms across the country, and then in the last 10 years or so, the corporate community and the enthusiasm with which corporate legal departments have embraced pro bono work, that has been an awakening, because for most folks, there were always impediments such as the fact that the corporate department was seen as a cost center, never a profit center, and thus you had to, how could you allow lawyers within a cost center to be spending time on pro bono work? And then you had things like malpractice coverage and so forth. But our corporate colleagues have been able to overcome any of those impediments and have really developed a thriving involvement in pro bono work in their communities. Certainly that's true here in the Twin Cities. And from the Institute and other conferences I've attended over the years, it's clear that that's the case across the country and indeed outside the country, where a lot of them have operations as well. So those are a couple of aspects about the growth of pro bono work and the development of it over the last few years or the last 20 years that I've seen in my time either as being involved in pro bono work here at this firm or on the pro bono advisory committee.
Very good and very interesting perspective. So taking that into account, what is the trajectory? What is going to happen next? I mean, nobody has a crystal ball, I don't think, but where do you see this going?
I think law firms and corporate legal departments have got a level of inertia going where I think that we will continue to see, I certainly hope we'll continue to see an expansion of pro bono work. I do think that there is a greater need to become involved with some of the other parts of the legal community who are working on matters involving the same clients. And I'm speaking here about the legal aid programs, both legal services corporation programs and other legal aid programs across the country. We know that there's still something in the order of 65 to 80% of legal needs that aren't being met of those who are economically disadvantaged. So we need to have a more concerted effort with these other parts of the process and the parts of the system. And going beyond just those who are working on legal services to the poor, what other kinds of governmental agencies and what other kinds of philanthropic enterprises are out there that will join with lawyers and to which lawyers can join in order to address problems on a more systemic level? That's been one of the great things that I think Esther Lardent and PBI generally have really been trying to facilitate in the last few years. How do we get at some of these systemic problems? And not just looking to lawyers to solve all these things, though obviously with PBI that's got to be the first level of involvement, but going beyond that and reaching out to other aspects of the community who can be involved in addressing those kind of problems. We're doing a pilot program for PBI here on exactly that kind of initiative, and our firm's involved as well as some of the other major firms, and the legal aid program here, and other governmental agencies as well. So it's that, I think, is where I'd like to see things going, so we can address things on a more systemic level, address some problems in ways that will be effective for a greater number of the people who need their problems to be addressed.
Well, that's fantastic. And we hope our folks listening to the Pro Bono Happy Hour will take that advice to heart, and we can see that type of replication elsewhere in the country and also in the world. I want to thank you again so much for joining us and taking the time to speak with us and allowing us to pick your brain. It's very important information, and again, we're very grateful for you sharing that.
Not a problem. I appreciate the opportunity to talk on this podcast.
Once again, that was Joe Genero of Dorsey & Whitney. We thank Joe for taking time out of his busy schedule to speak with us and give us some pointers on how we can keep up with pro bono in the Midwest. To listen to more podcasts in this series or learn about additional pro bono resources, visit www.probonoinst.org/podcast. If you're interested in having your firm featured on the Pro Bono Happy Hour, please email us at probono@probonoinst.org. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week for the Pro Bono Happy Hour.